Well, Jilly, it's hard to start this episode of the Sacramento Kings podcast with a fun, bubbly personality as we normally do, but I guess we'll give it a shot. Welcome in to the Kings Cast here as part of the Hoopball Podcast Network. We are thrilled and so thankful that you have allowed us to be a part of your Sacramento Kings coverage. I'm Damian Barling, ESPN 1320 here in Sacramento. She is Jill Adge, the boss and the host of your show. And Jill, the news is all bad. We did a show last week where it was like, hey, win streak came to an end against Philadelphia. No big deal. It's okay. Here's why it's okay. And we laid out all of these reasons about how they fought hard and this happened and that happened. And pretty much everything has gone to hell since the moment we published that episode.
That's always how it happens, right? I mean, with this team, anytime you start getting pessimistic, right, which is normal, all of a sudden they do something really flashy and you're like, oh, maybe. And then all of a sudden you get excited about the maybe and then boom, right back to earth. Like it's just a continuous up and down.
It's the Kings roller coaster season. It's like, what part of the roller coaster is this? Like, are we going to head back up? Is there like some type of twist turn? Like what part of the coaster are we on?
I mean, based on the runs we've had where, you know, it was down and then it was up and then it was down. Yeah. And then it was up, like really up, and then now it's really down again. We've had those couple where on one of the shows you were saying that you're going to have losses. You're going to have some runs of losses. It's just you don't want it to exceed 3-4. Like you want to be able to nip it. And and what's frustrating is these are the teams that you should have been take away the Nets, right? Like I'm not talking about the Nets or Philadelphia, but with the Magic and with Memphis, you could have nipped it with one of those two, right? And we can't use the injury excuse, I'm sorry, because Magic have more players hurt than us, and Memphis was down like 3 rotational players that they were actually playing during the season at some point. So yes, you know, we're having injuries, and for the first time this season, we're really having to use other players and piece them in. But that's where this team has always faltered, not even just this season, but over, you know, the last couple with this core. It's any time you kind of lose part of that foundation, this team forgets how to do anything, right? Whether it be a trade or an injury, anytime you like move a piece, it's this team forgets how to keep the wheels moving, essentially. And until that gets resolved, I think you're going to keep seeing the continuous up and down. And then we just got the news that there's a good chance that Rashawn Holmes and Harrison Barnes will be out against the Heat. And I mean, that's really screwy for us because we just lost Metu, right? Granted, he's a two-way, but he was our guy where when our bigs were hurt, you were he's a body. Yes.
Yeah.
And because it's not like you had a Frank Kaminsky, like you had another big on the bench that you could throw in. Like he was your big on the bench that you could put in while Whiteside's been in and out with injuries, his own self. And so take away that, then Barnes was your backup center. We've been using him to guard the centers the last couple games, and he was actually decent at it. But again, now you're back to I don't even know who you throw in there or if Whiteside can even last playing that long. I'm assuming it's you're going to have Bagley playing a lot of five.
Yep.
And you're going to see an increase in GR3 and Bielitsa again.
And there's a lot here to digest just in that like small, you know, breakdown that because you just talked about Bagley playing a lot at the five. Bagley missed 2 games over the weekend, you know, so now it's like, okay,
that's true. Yeah.
Let's go, big fella. All right. We're going to need you to do a whole lot here. If we're missing Harrison Barnes, and the fact that Luke Walton even hinted that it's possible that they miss tomorrow's game gives me a pretty good indication him and both Rashawn Holmes are almost certainly missing tomorrow's game or today's game, depending on when you're listening to this, against the Miami Heat. So that's certainly frustrating.
And depending on how this team sees Barnes, if he's if he's staying or if he's going to be a trade asset, you really don't want to, you know, ruin the plans there.
Well, and, yeah, you can't have anything happen to him either way.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, I mean, even more so to me, like, yes, you don't want him getting hurt, period. Right. But you could handle him sitting on your bench hurt if you're planning on keeping him. Rather, you know, you can stomach that a lot easier than he was our big trade piece and we had made the decision to move on. Yeah. And now, you know, we can't. So
it says a strained foot. That's what Harrison
and he
Barnes.
Played through it.
Yeah. And think about that for a second. Given the fact that we may have just gotten to the point where Harrison Barnes misses a game, and you look back at the way Harrison has played over the last three games, and I pointed it out as well. It's like, man, I mean, he's averaging like in the single digits. Like, this ain't the guy. Like, this isn't the guy who we called the rock of the team. Like, this ain't it. It makes a little bit more sense now if we know that he's been attempting to play through the strained foot.
And you saw he was not as aggressive in going to the rim like he had been. And if you have a foot strain, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
And I also have to imagine, not even remotely speaking from experience, but the closer you get to your Achilles, whether it's above with a calf strain or it's below with a foot strain, you're probably thinking about your Achilles. Now, with the foot, probably not as much. But if you tear something at the bottom of your foot, that could be problematic. But, you know, all of these muscles and ligaments and tendons wind up, you know, connected in one shape or form. And I always get nervous anytime there's something going on or anywhere in the vicinity of an Achilles, far more with a calf strain than a foot strain. But, again, it does bring Harrison Barnes' last three games into a greater scope, into a greater picture, assuming, of course, that he has been playing through that. And this isn't something that just magically appeared over the course of the last 24 to 48 hours. We haven't mentioned the fact that De'Aaron Fox missed the game against Orlando yet. We haven't mentioned the fact that Daquan Jeffries went from Luke Walton saying, hey, yeah, you know, it's good to have Daquan back at practice. We can see what Daquan does. And then all of a sudden, I don't know where we're going to be able to find him. We've got a good groove going here. We got a good rotation going here. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, Daquan, you're playing. Oh, you know what, fella, you're going to start. We're going to need you to get out there and give us not just minutes, but give us some big minutes. Because all of a sudden, after avoiding injuries for 24, 25 games, all of a sudden it's like, well, the injury bug has caught up with the Sacramento Kings roster, and it is maddening because it's all happening at once.
Yeah, and I think we had talked about this, that what is this team going to show us when that does happen?
Yeah.
Because we had been one of the few teams that really hadn't hit. But that was kind of my frustration when it came to what he said about Jeffries, with this, how bad this team had been defensively. Like, that's the one piece where that kid shines, right? Mm-hmm. And you saw it when he did get pieced in there, that he was the one guy where you could see, like, physically going at it on the defensive end and actually made some really good stops and plays. I would like to see his minutes, I don't know if it's a minute restriction or if it's just what it is, but because we haven't really got that answer yet, that if his sporadic minutes of how he's being put in is because of some kind of minute restriction, mm-hmm. or if it's just that's how Luke's feeling at the time. But I would like to see more of that. I just don't with this team. I don't know.
a week ago, everything was fine. Everything was fine. 1 week ago, you and I were looking at each other going, it's not that bad. I know the loss to Philadelphia is frustrating because in the fourth quarter, it felt like you had it. But really, we're talking a 3-1 spurt against some really, really good basketball teams. And now here we are talking about an 0-3 spurt, a 4-game losing streak where you lost. And I think this is, I'm so happy that you pointed it out, because I feel like people weren't. Well, you know, Fox and Bagley were gone. Dude, Evan Fournier was gone. Al Farouq Aminu was gone. Cole Anthony was gone. Michael Carter Williams hadn't played in like six months.
Their main point guard, Fultz, who then Anthony was having to play. I don't know what's going on with the Magic either, because they just came out at Anthony had the shoulder strain, and they're like, oh, after further testing, now he's got like a cracked rib. And it's like, what's going on there? That, I mean, it's continuous. Yeah, I think Fournier, today's his first game back, but he had had a stretch with his back spasms and stuff. But yeah, I mean, and that was Michael Carter.
And
that
Michael Carter Williams,
it was his first or second game back, and we made him look unstoppable.
It was his first. Yeah.
I mean,
it was his first.
He was driving. It was Ole right to the basket. I mean, there were four times in a row where literally he went through all five people. Like, and no offense to MCW, but he is not like Kyrie, and we made him look like he could drive like Kyrie. Like it, yeah. I mean, it was nuts.
As we saw several nights later.
I mean, yeah. And so it's, and so yes, last week or the week before, we were talking really well, you know, about this team, but just a week or two before that, we were doing what we're doing now, where it was a 3-4 game, 5 game losing streak, if not more than that. So it's just, honestly, at this point, it's either they're really good or they're really bad. Like, there doesn't seem to be much in the way of an in-between. Granted, the only time I will say except that was the Philadelphia game, where I'm not big on, like, you know, moral victories or, you know, that kind of stuff. But to me, that was a good loss. Like, you stayed with that team. You gave yourself a shot at the end. And really, when you're playing a better team, to me, that's all you can hope for. Be in the game and give yourself a shot at the end. And they did. They played smart, high IQ basketball. And when they go through these streaks of losing, it's completely, they go away from everything that's made them successful. And that's what's so frustrating about this group, is we've seen it with this group for what, around 3 years now. And it's like, when will it stop, or will it ever stop? Mm-hmm. And at that point too, that's where, you know, as we're getting closer to the trade deadline, that's where the front office now has to make the decision of, are these players capable of actually making that next step? Or is this just where they're going to be? Because for some of these players, it's their deficiencies with us, but you go put them on a good team, it will be masked. They will be just fine. Buddy will be just fine. Corey Joseph will be just fine. But when you're on a bad defensive team, or, you know what I mean? Like, they're glaring, right? Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of decisions that have to be made in, you know, the next couple weeks. And it's going to be interesting to see which way.
Can we talk about Metu for a second and the play with Valanciunas? I'm sure everybody has seen it 1,000 times by now, and I encourage everybody to go see it 1,000 times more, because there was a point early this morning, because we spent a lot of time talking about it on the show today, and there was a point this morning where I'm convinced that everybody in the world is an idiot except for me. Like, I was reading so many comments, and these obviously aren't coming from Kings fans, but even Ja Morant. Like, I have no issue with Ja Morant. I like Ja. I appreciate what he brings to the league. I think he's incredibly exciting. I know he's backing his player in this sense, but he says Metu was feeling himself a little bit too much on that dunk, and he pulled Valanciunas aside, said, hey, don't worry, you know, we'll get him back. He doesn't believe that Valanciunas was trying to hurt him. When you go back and you watch that play with Metu dunking, you see what, to me, is just crystal clear. Metu dunks it. His momentum brings it around. He doesn't put his legs on Valanciunas. He doesn't do anything of the sort. As a matter of fact, he comes around. His, like, Valanciunas's, like, arm is underneath his leg, and he wraps it up. You could see Metu reacting like, yo, he takes his hand off the rim and puts it in the air like, this dude has me wrapped up. And seconds later, he's being flung around and thrown to the ground off of the freaking rim. And Ja's sitting here talking about Metu was feeling himself, and that's why that happened. It's like, hey, that's bullshit.
See, right, and this is my thing, is if you look at the different angles, he dunked the ball, and he's holding on to the rim like so many other players do when there's a play underneath him. It's not his fault. It was a 7-footer that was underneath him and not, let's say, a 6'2 guy where he can actually maneuver, you know, around. When you're dealing with someone the size of JV, like there's nowhere for him to go. Like physically, there was nowhere for that kid to go. And so anyone saying that there were multiple, I mean, even the fans coming out, that a lot of the Memphis ones, even since then, since it's happened, really surprised me that, oh, that's what a kid gets for trying to punk somebody. And it's like, they were down at that point, right? Like it would, they weren't in the game. Mm-hmm. And
they weren't in that game at all.
Right. He's, this was not him trying to showboat at all.
So,
and I think they're, it's because you see maybe other good players doing things like that. But again, they're not doing it to a 7-footer that's over him. Like when you just physically look at the play, there's nowhere for the kid to land or to go without physically putting himself in danger as well. And I don't get how no one on the Kings even tried. Like the only one I saw moving forward was Glenn Robinson. But even then it was like, he was moving like that. Like, okay guys, like, okay. Like he stood in front of Metu when he got up.
Pisses me off. But
it was, he was looking at Metu. He wasn't looking at JV. Right. And then Jonas was pissed off about what happened and then went purposely at Corey Joseph, and no one did anything either. Refs, player, like nothing. Where I don't get how, like, and we talk about, is this team soft? Is it like not being physical and stuff like this?
Soft as hell.
You're completely allowing them to, where they thought the Kings were going at them. Oh no. Yeah. Like that was the other way around. And they were like, all right, cool. Like we're getting our asses That's kicked, such like trash. Whatever. And now their guy's hurt.
That's such trash. That's the part that infuriates me. Like, fans are going to be fans. You rep your team, like, whatever. Tyrese Halliburton said today, I felt like what happened was definitely wrong. He went on to talk about how Metu is a hard worker. He's a two-way contract guy trying to prove himself. Luke Walton said that night of the Memphis game, he thought it was a dangerous play. He said today after practice that he thought it was a dirty play then. He still thinks it is now. But the part that absolutely
infuriates me. He's the only one that I actually heard any player talk about that night was Walton. He was pretty adamant like the whole time that, but I didn't hear, I mean, unless I missed it, I didn't hear any other Kings player.
Well, Tyrese said it today. Tyrese said that today. I don't know that anyone said it that night.
But the fact that we had a Blazers player call him out before a Kings,
player,
you know what I mean? I'm happy Walt did, right? Like, I'm happy Luke did, like, as the coach, like, cool. He even could have got thrown out during the game, like, done something, but at least he actually spoke up that night, right? And was even yelling at the refs when it happened. And we all know I'm not a Walton fan, but kudos to him because he was the only one that actually, like that night, that seemed to have his back. But the fact that somebody on another team is speaking out before anybody on your current team, like, come on.
Like Yusuf Nurkic, like an MVP candidate, steps up and says, dude, Valanciunas, this is weak. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, that's trash. And still, I just can't get over, like, I'm trying to envision a situation where you and I are out walking along and someone comes and throws you to the ground and I just help you up. Like, I'm trying to envision a situation where someone like just throws another person to the ground in the midst of a game. And look, we know in the league, we know the NBA doesn't fight, nor should you. Like there's no place for fighting. But
you can yell and get in someone's face.
You can get in somebody's face. Like I saw, I think it was Kenny told me who it was. I think it was Tim who said Harry Giles would not have allowed that to happen. We all know Amon Shumpert wouldn't have allowed that to happen. Like nobody, you know, though there are certain guys who wouldn't have let that go unchecked. Meanwhile, I don't want to say you've got a roster full of guys because you know you can't leave the bench area, but you certainly have five of them that didn't have a damn thing to say to Valanciunas after they just threw you know, this young man to the floor from the rim. It's not like he was thrown from the ground. It's not like he had a chance to set himself. Like, he was thrown off the rim and no one did anything. And that part, to me, if you were to find a moment that characterizes the Sacramento Kings right now at this point in the season, that's the moment for me.
Yeah, and I know I saw people mention, oh, well, the bench got up, because at that point it was the backups in the game, and I guess the starters were on the bench. Like, they got to their feet, like, okay. But so you're telling me nobody outside of your, what, top five players wants to get in, like, get pumped, get in someone's face, like – And like, hey, man,
I know
we've
got depth. I know the Kings got depth problems. That's not what we meant. Yeah, that is not what we meant by depth problems. And come on, fellas, like, what are we doing, man? It's just so frustrating, man. It really is. It's really just so frustrating. And, you know, sometimes you just want them to pop somebody. Just get in somebody's face. And okay, you don't have a response then. You mentioned this a moment ago. How do you not have a response when he dips on Corey Joseph, realizes it's Corey and not Metu, and then swings his body around trying to get Metu? Like, that Valanciunas is trash. That whole situation is trash. But worse off is the Kings' reaction to it. So that's been bugging. That really has been bugging me all day. Like, that was probably way too big of a topic today, but it is just bugged the hell out of me.
Like you said, though, it just goes to the overall, you know, kind of what we've seen from this team and from their own words themselves, that they're not physical and they're not, you know what I mean? Like, that's not them. And unfortunately, that's not going to get you far in the NBA. Like, it's not. You need some dogs out there. Like, that's one thing that everybody always loved about Harry, is that dude, like, he was 0 to 100 all the time, right? Yeah. And didn't matter if he was on the bench, on the court, like he was that guy. So
with what we know potentially, and it really does feel like likely with Harrison Barnes and Rashawn Holmes, at least against Miami, I do not like this week coming up. Like this, I do not know where we're going to be the next time we do a podcast together. I mean, they've got the Heat, and we know what a fight that was for them and Jimmy Butler's return in Miami. And then they've got a back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday with Chicago and Milwaukee on the road. And then they've got Brooklyn coming up again, and Brooklyn is really starting to find their way. You know, they've got the New York Knicks, who owe them a bit of a receipt, and they're still playing their defensive style of ball. And then they got the Detroit Pistons, and, you know, the Knicks and the Pistons aren't particularly good teams, but spoiler alert, neither were Orlando and Memphis. So this, you know, I was going to say,
we can't even say that because, again, we don't know which team is going to show up on any given night.
And that's what
night.
I mean. Like, I was going to say, you know, this team needs to find itself, but I don't even know if that's the case. They're going to have to figure out what they look like. If certain players, like, they have to, I recognize that I'm about to say the stupidest thing ever. They've got to find depth somehow. Like, somebody has to step up. Like, someone has to fill in this role, you know, with, I don't know. I don't know that Hassan Whiteside is at the stage of his career where he could do it. I don't know if they need to call somebody. I don't know what they need to do, but they've got to figure something out.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about how Fox had found that next, you know, step. And during that game, it's like, he was playing out of his mind, right? But to me, like, that is awesome. But I'm happy we saw it. But at this point in year four, I still don't think it's realistic to expect him to be able to do that every night yet. Like, we saw he can do it, but I don't think we're going to get that. Right, like that all the time. Not like we're still gonna see. So again, like you said, you need other people to step up in ways. And you know, in years past. So I mean, I think we said this last week that Buddy it was averaging like 16 points a game, like he, you know what I mean? Like that they were still winning and his numbers were still down. So it was Tim that actually put something up the other day and said, I think it was Barnes numbers, like in the wins, here's Barnes numbers and the loss. Like we've talked about that. And when they're losing, here's his numbers. And I said, okay, well, what's Buddy? Literally, his numbers did not affect wins or loss. Like, they were the same. Like, he had the same numbers in the wins and the same numbers in the losses. Like,
yeah.
So it was like, you're going to need him to go one way or the other.
Yeah, wasn't like, that you who said, hey, do Buddy next? Was that?
Yes.
Didn't you? That, oh, that was so good.
And so when he said that, I was like, how is that even, like, that's the craziest stat to me that literally did not affect it one way or the other.
Man, and what, like, in reality, like, I mean, and for those of you who didn't see this tweet, who aren't big into, one, you should absolutely be following Jill Adge if you're not yet, but two, like, what does that say? Like, it was 16 points, win or losses. It was plus or minus half a rebound, half an assist, you know, in wins or losses for Buddy. Dude, I looked at that tweet for a while, like, what does this mean? Like, is Buddy insignificant?
I guess you can say he might be the most consistent player. I mean, based on that, his numbers
consistently
are there.
Inconsistent.
Right. Like, but that's the thing. Like, he's out there for one reason, right? Like, he's out there for threes and to score, which to me is crazy right now that I think he's still second in the league and three-pointers made, and he's had so many games of bad shooting nights. And maybe that's just how crazy this season has been.
Yeah.
Shooting so many threes where I still would like to see him go to the rim more and things like that. I don't even know. But it really did surprise me that it was not one way or the other. But I mean, I don't even want to pick on him, but there were certain times in these last couple games where he had a couple fast break options and he was leading the fast break and he has two other guys around him and he's taking it right at the defender and loses it like almost every time. And it's like, and then it would start a run right for the other team. And this was part of talking earlier, and that this front office has to, you know, come to a decision that we're still seeing the same things, you know, year three, year four. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's realistic. It's, you're going to see that from players, but I'd rather see it year three or four from a 23, 24 year old rather than a 27, 28 year old. Like, right. Like, at least, I mean, yes, we know what we're getting from him at this point, and he's made improvements in defense and other things. Where I think Tim today put up one where it was actually Corey Joseph's numbers on defense are actually even worse than Buddy, which kind of surprised me. But I mean, I don't want this to be like a pick on Buddy Hield thing, but I mean, because everybody was playing, you know, poor.
Yeah.
But again, these are part of the decisions that the front office is going to have to make. And that is it better for De'Aaron Fox to have a shooter like that around him? Does it, you know, it does removing Buddy hurt Fox's game? I don't know, because of that stretch where even when Buddy's, this is the thing about Buddy's, even when he's having his off nights, teams still respect what that guy can do because he can, you know, go, you know, NBA Jam on fire at you know, the switch of a snap. So it's, and then you remove that from the situation, depending on what you bring it back in. Does that then hurt Fox's game and the, you know, strides that he's made? I don't know, but.
Well, I don't know what happened between, I don't know what happened since we started recording this. Like, Luke Walton was speaking as we were getting ready to record this. That's where he said Rashawn and Harrison Barnes are probably out. Sean Cunningham tweeted a moment ago, Rashawn Holmes and Harrison Barnes are out versus the game versus Miami. Remember, Harrison Barnes is Jimmy Butler's defender. Jimmy Butler had 30 the last time this team played. These two teams played. Yeah, dude, this sucks. This sucks. Barnes is out. Rashawn Holmes is out. Go get some alcohol, kids, because it's gonna be a rough six game stretch here, I think, for the Kings.
Yeah, he did mention that it was during the Memphis game, and for Barnes and that he played through it during the Brooklyn, you know, kudos to him for trying, you know, for
that explains a lot,
you know, they're playing through, yeah. But yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what we get tomorrow and how this rotation's gonna, like I said, I'd have to imagine we're going to see Bagley and Whiteside at center and Bielitsa and GR3 or Jeffries playing the 3-4. I mean, I'm hoping that this, you know, throw Jeffries in at three again and then work, you know, Belly and GR3 how they need to. But this is the time where I'd rather see Jeffries get the minutes.
Well, I think in this situation you're going to, like, yeah, these guys are going to get a ton of minutes because you have to. You like Harrison Barnes is a 35, 6, 7, 8 minute a night guy. Like, there are minutes there to be had now with Harrison gone and Rashawn Holmes gone. Rashawn Holmes is a 30 minute a night guy. I don't imagine a singular guy is going to get those minutes. So whether you're a hashtag little dog guy or you're a, you know, Daquan guy, DJ, I don't know what his nickname is. Like, whatever it is, you're probably going to get what makes you happy. Like, they're going to get some run tomorrow. And I'm guessing they're probably going to get some run, you know, over the course of the next handful of days or so. Brutal loss for the Kings. On top of, you know, just a difficult four-game stretch where we saw De'Aaron miss a game, where we saw Marvin Bagley miss two games, we saw Rashawn Holmes miss a game, we saw Metu go out with an injury. So everything that the Sacramento Kings were able to avoid through the first 24 games of the season has just been leveled on them over the course of the last week or so. So it'll be the Kings in Miami, and they'll be off on a 5-game road trip immediately following that. Jill, I don't know what this is going to look like, but we'll be here to cover it. It'll be a roller coaster. Again, I don't know what part of the roller coaster we're on, but it'll be a roller coaster.
That it will be. That it will be. Congrats, by the way, too, on the radio extension, the time slot extension, for those that are listening that did not – that. Had missed the news somehow.
Have I ever mentioned that I work on a radio show? I don't know that I don't ever recall bringing that up at all. Not multiple times a show at all. One of the reasons, like, my schedule, there's two reasons that I love doing this podcast, despite how hectic the schedule has been. And I mean this sincerely. The number one reason is you. Like, I love being able to talk Kings basketball with you every single week. And now that we have 4 hours, I'm going to need you a lot more during the radio show hours. Just a warning there. And two, I mean, I love, you know, this is such a the Kings audience, like the Kings fan base is so passionate, even in their, you know, we're passionate in our excitement and we're passionate in our frustration. So I like that you and I get to get together each week and share our passionate excitement and our passionate frustration as well. It's yep. Good stuff.
And I got to see one of the reasons too. I love
thank
this.
Thank you for the congratulations, by the way. That was the whole point. Thank you. This show's moving to 12 to 4. We appreciate it.
And this fan base that was yesterday, I know you saw it, was I put out that piece about the Monarchs. Like, my phone still today has been like going off on people. That one guy responded that, he used to work at a rental car spot in Chico, and he had someone that would come in weekly and would rent a car every week to drive down to Sacramento to watch the Monarchs and then come back. But like this place, I mean, just the amount of people that are still like, oh my God, bring them back. Like, I miss that so much. I want that for my daughter, like all that stuff. You don't see that everywhere, right? Like, I mean, especially for women's sports, like that's not, and like this place still is like, give it to us.
You don't see that in franchises. Like, they're like, I could name them all, like Connecticut, Phoenix has a really, really good fan base. Vegas, they've established a very, very good fan base. From there.
And Seattle. Seattle's been consistent.
Oh, Seattle. Sorry. Yeah. Seattle has a great fan base. Yeah.
And their history, like, yeah.
Indiana's okay. Like, I think once you get away from those four, you fall into groups where like, yeah, okay, they're good. Like they're not horrible or anything like that. Sacramento was in the upper echelon with the Connecticuts and what now is Las Vegas and Phoenix and Seattle. Like they were in that group.
Yeah.
And I mean, it yeah. sucks that there's probably, I mean, that team has been gone for over 10 years now.
Someone responded that it was reminiscent of the US, how USA soccer works, that the Monarchs were, you know, how the women's team is and the men's, because it was like the last season was like really the only season that they were bad and like missed the playoff. I mean, mm-hmm. they'd been consistent and almost had the back-to-back championships, like, right? I mean, that they were like the women's soccer team out there, yep. who everybody loves. And that's when, as a fan of basketball, we got to see our wins there, right? Yep. Like, and then we were even lucky during that streak where, you know, we had both teams really good, and both teams almost won championships at the same time. But I mean, it's just another thing we love about this community. And
we had the number two pick that year, and we're trying to figure out a way to get to trade with Minnesota to get the number one overall pick, because it was Tina. It was Tina Charles. And it went, you know, I'll never forget November. It was around Thanksgiving, and got the call that it was gone. And they, you know, the Maloofs had given them 2 weeks to find a buyer, and there's no chance. We just can't get this done in 2 weeks. And I remember being at the All-Star game. I can't remember where it was, but it was the All-Star game a couple of months later. And Kevin Johnson walked over to where we were sitting, and he said, he doesn't say hello. He doesn't say, how are you doing? He sits down and goes, if they would have told us, we would have had someone to buy the team. We could have gotten buyers like immediately, but they came to us way too late. We had no idea that they were getting rid of the team. And it was brutal.
Yeah.
Just brutal, 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 brutal.
Yeah.
Hopefully one day, though. Hopefully one day. I'm excited for the Storm to be here. But I would be really excited to see the WNBA back. I hope people who, again, there are people who haven't gotten to experience it. That was 10 years ago. To be able to experience the WNBA game. The Golden
and Knights, as, you know, someone growing up who loved basketball, and like that was, I mean, it was cool seeing it represented out here. Mm-hmm. And this is the funny thing. I don't think I ever told you this, that I think I've told you this before, though. I grew up a Tennessee fan, right? Like randomly. And it was because I was in elementary school and had to do a state report. And the state I got was Tennessee. And I'm a huge sports fan growing up. And I'm like, I don't know, fourth, fifth grade at this point. And that's when I discovered Pat Summitt mm-hmm. and Tennessee. And during the 90s, that's when they were going through their huge, you know, runs. And that's, you know, and then discovered Kara. And I mean, the rest of their like ridiculous amount of people that they've had come out of there between like Coldsclaw and there you go.
I'm doing a visual. This is just one of my most cherished things on the planet.
Yeah.
Like I just this book and the inscription in this book mean the absolute world to me.
And so to have a team come here and then have like Kara come here, right? At that point, it was just like, oh my God. Like, and then getting to see too so many like Tennessee players at the time coming through here on different teams. Like it was just I mean, because around here, like there wasn't no offense, but there wasn't like women's college basketball that was, you know, featured. And it just happened to be my state project, like hooked that for me.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
That's how it was. But I mean, and I'm sad for like my nieces and stuff, where I tell them about this stuff and I'll get them to watch it, where they've ended up loving Connecticut, right? Because Connecticut's the team that's always on TV, and Brianna Stewart growing up. And so like that, they've been able to watch that stuff. But I am sad that I haven't been able to take them to, you know, to games and things like that. So one day.
I hope so. It's the WNBA is so important. Women's sports are so important. Representation is so important. And I know in order for the league to expand, they can't expand by Sacramento. They need to expand by Sacramento and another city for it to really make sense. And the execution of that is difficult for that league. But, you know, hopefully it is something that can happen. Gracie's getting anxious. She's ready to eat. That usually signals the end of the podcast. So we appreciate you guys so much for tuning in. Subscribe, rate, review, do all of that wonderful stuff. For Jill Adge, for Gracie, I'm Damian Barley. We thank you so much for being with us here on the Hoopball Podcast Network.